Thank you and good morning. My presentation today is the final talk. We'll address work we've been doing actually in most part with TJ Bell, the impetus in large part for this work on looking at the wound healing properties as well as the hygienic properties of gray cotton. Comes from some innovative approaches to mechanically cleaning gray cotton to make it available for these types of applications. So then, first to speak about wound healing materials and why we've begun to look at gray cotton for applications in different areas of wound healing. If one looks down through the ages, certainly in early mankind, natural materials were used for wound healing. Honey, for example, bark, leaves, and cotton. And modern day dressings came into play with Lister's impregnation of bandages with carbolic acid. And then over the next 100 years or so, they continued to improve. And then another milestone occurred in the 60s with George Winter's discovery, his Nature paper, which was a milestone in moist wound healing. And this spawned a whole industry of semi-occlusive dressings. And then on down into present day, we have tissue engineering and regenerative medicine, which are very amazing areas of science. But people are still looking at these natural materials from of old. And honey, as a matter of fact, is now on the market as a chronic wound dressing. So you can see our impetus for looking at cotton, revisiting cotton. And here we see a diagram which has oft been used by scientists from Southern Regional Research Center and a legacy of Billy Goins. A montage of images of the cotton fiber. And bleached cotton, of course, addresses the secondary cell wall properties, which is virtually all cellulose. However, if one retains the cuticle and the primary cell wall, we have these interesting waxes and pectin, which have properties that I'll talk about today towards wound healing benefits. So to talk about the actual wound healing materials, we need to understand some of the processes of wound healing. Wound healing, of course, is a very complex and as yet not completely understood area. Some 1,000 publications a month are being generated globally in wound healing, a very exciting area of science. But in hemostasis, which is the first stage, we have an ingestion of platelets, which have growth factors that are later important in the inflammatory and proliferative stages. And most importantly, we have deposition of fibrin, which comes from a breakdown of fibrogen from thrombin, an enzyme, into small peptides that aggregate. So what we've done in our lab is to adopt a procedure for measuring the clotting process of the hemostatic phase of wound healing, which occurs only in about the first few seconds to an hour as the initial stage of wound healing. Some consider it not even a stage of wound healing. But the thromboelastography does assess the viscoelastic properties of whole blood under low shear conditions and provides information about global hemostatic function from the beginning of clot formation through clot retraction and the breakdown of the clot. What one gets from measurements done in a rotating cup at 45 degrees with a sensor is a variety of parameters. One, R, which is the actual initial fibrin formation. Alpha, which is the kinetics of fibrin formation. And then the actual time of clot formation, K, and then the strength of clot formation. So we can measure these parameters simultaneously along this ellipsoidal curve generated in the presence of a biomaterial, and it's typically used by surgeons, but it has been adopted in biomaterials labs. So interestingly enough, when we look at gray cotton, 100% non-woven gray cotton compared with bleached cotton, what we find is that the value for R, which is fiber formation, important in the early deposition of a clot, is half the value. It occurs in half the time that found with bleached cotton. K as well is shortened by 50%. And the rate, alpha, of clot formation, seen here in yellow, is sped up. So this is very interesting. This is bleached cotton compared with gray cotton. What's going on here? Well, to look at this a little further in terms of a carrier of clay minerals and in the field of hemorrhage control, we know globally we've had conflicts that have required battlefield dressings and their improvement, and considerable effort has been made in this area over the years. The gold standard for use on the battlefield now is combat gauze. This is a kaolin. Kaolin is a clay mineral. Kaolin treated non-woven with polyester and rayon as the non-woven. So what we did was to look at a type of non-woven with the addition of kaolin to it and compared it with cotton gauze. What we found was that this particular gray cotton non-woven had considerably less R value or shorter clot time than when combat gauze. The alpha value also was increased over cotton gauze. So we can use gray cotton to apply to the kaolin type hemorrhage control research. To look at the other stage of wound healing that we've addressed in terms of non-woven gray cotton, the inflammatory stage, this is where granulation tissue is formed. This is the initial tissue that one looks for that is the first visible sign of healing. Our impetus for looking at gray cotton in this phase of wound healing really came from a paper in 1993 by a group in Wales by Schmidt et al., who reported that, and it had been observed in the clinic, granulation tissue accelerates in formation with pectin-containing semi-occlusive wound dressings. Going back to George Winter's moist wound healing, these types of dressings used to create moist wound healing conditions, many of them contain pectin. And so this was the impetus. What one gets in the inflammatory stage then is an ingestion of growth factors. What can happen in disrupted wound healing and formation of chronic wounds, which affects some 2.5 million people in the United States, is that you have a breakdown of these growth factors and a failure to heal. So thus one gets a chronic wound where nothing is healing. And in this area, we have developed some dressings that have been FDA approved for sequestration of proteases, which are coming from neutrophils that break down these growth factors. So with regard to gray cotton and the proteases, we did look somewhat preliminarily, as you see in this slide, the sequestration of proteases before one goes into mass action of the dressing. Gray cotton, seen here in green, is an enhanced sequestration of proteases over scour and bleached cotton. Now, to talk about what I think is an interesting aspect of the gray cotton for its promise in the treatment of chronic wounds, one needs to talk about pectin. And pectin, of course, is a carbohydrate that contains galacturonic acid and sequesters calcium in what's known as an egg box structure motif. And this is similar to alginate. Alginate is widely used as a semi-occlusive dressing as well in a moist wound healing, and gels well and does not adhere to the wound. So we looked at pectin levels in gray cotton, non-wovens, and compared them with moist wound healing dressings such as Duoderm paste and Duoderm patch. Seen here then are the glycuronic acid and actually pectin levels, glycuronic acid again, monomer of pectin, in those two types of semi-occlusive dressings. And so you get about 580 to 590 micrograms per milligram and 530 here with the Duoderm patch. So if we look at the gray cotton non-woven, we get considerably less pectin. We would expect that. Some is washed away in the hydroentanglement process. These are hydroentangled non-wovens produced at the Southern Regional Research Center in our non-wovens unit. But you see about 10 to 12, 13 times less pectin than in the Duoderm patch and Duoderm paste. So to get to the mode of action of this whole thing with pectin, pectin generates hydrogen peroxide. Hydrogen peroxide is a very important signaling molecule in cell proliferation, actually throughout the plant and animal kingdom. In the context of wound healing, hydrogen peroxide is most relevant in terms of its secretion throughout the wound healing process. This cartoon here shows the growth factor binding NADPH oxidase, which converts oxygen to superoxide, and then on to hydrogen peroxide that enters through aquaforins and oxidizes important phosphatases that lead to nuclear transcription and cell proliferation. Low-level hydrogen peroxide is important to cell proliferation, and however, high-level hydrogen peroxide can be toxic to cell proliferation. So then if one looks at the levels of hydrogen peroxide production using a scopolamine assay, which is a fluorescent molecule that we utilize to assess hydrogen peroxide, we see as hydroentanglement gray cotton gave a relatively higher generation of hydrogen peroxide using this fluorescent assay, as did the needle-punched cotton, compared with the Duoderm patch and the Duoderm paste. When we look at, well, this is actually the Duoderm paste, the other one was the Duoderm patch, but again, you see the comparable to higher levels of hydrogen peroxide generated by the cotton versus the Duoderm patch. So what's going on here? There's less pectin, but yet it generates as much or more hydrogen peroxide. That's one of the things we're looking at. So in terms of structure then, going from the Fleischner type sample on through to hydroentanglement, SEM images in the actual cotton fiber itself, we're dealing with cellulose 1, and this is a bit of an icon, at least for the talk of water binding to cellulose. We know, and this was provided by Al French, this image of monolayers of, or layers of water binding to crystallites of cellulose. So then, to talk about hygiene at the end of this presentation, there's a great potential volume for cotton in this market, both for top sheets and acquisition distribution layers. Within the incontinence product, we have four layers to cover stock acquisition distribution. Sometimes they're separate layers, but intimately connected in the absorbent core. Most of these layers have been synthetic. There have been some cellulose present in them. What we have found, and the next few slides I want to show you today, are some very interesting performance properties of the gray cotton non-wovens. And we've studied the surface properties of these, but these performance properties really get at what could catapult nonwoven gray cotton into the nonwovens market. To do this, we look at three simple tests, a strike through, which is the measurement of the liquid striking through the top sheet and the time it takes to go from the top sheet. Top sheet, remember, is the portion of the incontinence product in contact with the skin. The time from the top sheet to the absorbent core, and then the re-wet, which is the moisture that would be felt if diaper or pad begins to be saturated. It's around less than 0.2 mils. But again, this is connected with the strike through and is measured by lowering a weight onto the test sample and then measuring how much moisture absorbs back through the sample. The acquisition test is a flow through cell where the synthetic urine enters here, and it tests the ability of the sample to accommodate and acquire, distribute the liquid across the absorbent core, and is measured for efficacy in terms of the amount of overflow, as seen here in pink, or leakage. So some of the preliminary work that we did suggested that the gray cotton itself had very good re-wet and strike-through properties. However, the acquisition of the liquid was not as good, and this prompted treatment with a penetrant, which is a surfactant emulsion, polyurethane polysiloxane emulsion, done by Huntsman Chemical. And what was found was that upon treatment, these gray cotton nonwoven samples, these Fleischner samples, I showed you the image in the previous slide, had exceedingly better re-wet values than a commercial spun bond top sheet. The multi-dose liquid strike-through, which is a repeated strike-through using a different filter paper, but the same sample, gave also very impressive low strike-through times compared with the commercial spun bond top sheet. The acquisition distribution of the liquid was also very impressive. Here we see, again, the overflow of the commercial after multiple doses. You would expect it to increase, and a lower overflow with the gray cotton nonwoven sample. So these are some very promising results for the hygiene applications. Certainly what we're thinking is that it can be considered as a low-cost bio-based fiber alternative to synthetic fibers for top sheet use and design. With regard to the wound healing properties, we're still studying what mechanism this hydrogen peroxide generation may have coming from a plant fiber. It very well be due to the retention of the primary cell wall because one can mechanically clean the cotton. And some acknowledgments for the Huntsman folks who did some of the work that weren't co-authors, and for the folks in Kalamazoo, Michigan who did the testing. Thank you for your attention.
This is our last presentation. This concludes the session. Any questions for Vince? And right now it's break time. People are only for coffee, but we
Yes. Do you have to take any particular precautions putting raw cotton or gray cotton on a wound from a hygienic standpoint?
Do you have to take any precautions?
If you wash it, you get rid of some of these healing properties, I suppose. So how do you reconcile this idea of taking something out of nature and putting it on your wound?
Right. Well, the dressing has to pass certain bioburden tests. It has been shown, actually, by the folks at TJ Bell that the bioburden can be reduced significantly through gamma ray sterilization. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your...